Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Today, we're going to do something just a little bit different. We kind of have a theme. Today, my co-host is Sydney Franklin. She's one of my co-workers. And we work together on a lot of things, but she covers development for The Inquirer. And she's really been spearheading with some others The Inquirer's downtown project this year. And so she's going to join me. We're going to talk about downtown Cincinnati, which is one of our favorite topics, as you guys all know. And our special guest is Tony Berkla. And he is doing, you probably know him, not his name. You will know his name, though. I can just tell. For his projects, the 580 building, the Terrace Plaza Hotel. He has a lot of things going in downtown Cincinnati. We're going to get to know him and talk about those projects and what's next for him. And so we'll kind of stick to a theme today. I'm very excited to have Sydney with me.
Hi, everyone. Super happy to be here. Thanks, Sherry, for having me.
You said you wanted to talk about downtown, and I was like, well, Burl and I do talk about downtown, but you're the expert, and like, we like experts here.
I love Cincinnati, and obviously development is my forte, but I live in the downtown area, and I walk these streets every day and pay attention to literally everything going on, and I have to tell our listeners, Tony Berkla is a hard get. I've been trying to talk to him for a year, so this is a big treat.
I know. I'm excited. It's always good to talk to people like, you know, I like having ongoing conversations like the mayor, but new guests are fun too. But let's talk just a quick little bit about you. How long have you been here? Because time does kind of compress for me. How long have you been at The Inquirer now?
It's been about a year and maybe 3 months.
No, it has to be longer than that.
No, it feels like forever. It's so
in
cheesy.
A good way.
It's
it
so
feels
cheesy.
Like
I know,
forever
sure.
Forever in a good way,
it's
right?
It's meant to be.
So I can remember, like, you came from New York, right? And what drew you to come and cover development in Cincinnati?
Well, I've always been a real estate adjacent reporter, I'll call it. My last job, I was a real estate reporter, but I came into the topic through architecture and design. I love studying buildings so much, but I always wanted to be a journalist. And I thought, how can I combine these two passions and not have to report about fires or anything that young reporters have to do? But I quickly learned that covering real estate, you really cover everything under the sun with it. You know, politics, sustainability, crime, everything, racial issues. It's a fascinating beat. And Cincinnati is just perfect for me. People love historic preservation. That's something I'm passionate about. And people should know, like, I'm from Louisville, so I have a pretty close tie to Cincinnati, and I grew up visiting all the time. I had dates at Great American Ballpark. I would come visit my grandparents and go to the zoo in Hyde Park. Like, Cincinnati was always a special place to me.
And there's so much to cover, right? Like I always say, I mean, it's a small, big city. Like, we can't get to everything that we even want to cover.
No, and I have a partner, Randy Tucker, also covers real estate, but there's too much for us both.
No, we do our best, though. And that's a very fun problem to have. I have to say, I thought I would be a fashion reporter, but here I am. And I wouldn't have it any other way covering City Hall.
No, you kill it. I could see you doing fashion, but it's its own beast for
yes.
sure.
And so what kind of, so we have, you know, how we got to August, I'm a little unclear this year, speaking of time being compressed. What made you kind of take on the whole idea of, you know, a downtown project for the year?
Well, there are too many stories to cover in a short series that would take, say, a month. We really started researching it in January and didn't release it to the public until mid-May, which was on purpose. We wanted to talk to as many residents, business owners, locals, even workers, people who are actively down here maybe 3 days a week, to get to know what they like, dislike about downtown and what they think the future should hold for it. So it was a big undertaking. I've talked to a lot of people. And that informed the various articles that we've put out over the last several months. We've done like 25 or something. And this podcast today is a piece of content. They're not just articles. It's everything. Like videos, podcasts. I've been on the radio. Different
things. I mean, and Tony's really driving part of the future. These
yes.
are big projects that he's doing. And so his perspective of why he came here from Indianapolis, mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to talking about. What would you say is the biggest thing right now that's happening downtown? What is the moment right now that's happening.
Well, he's going to talk today about the like office to condo conversions, and we've written a lot about this, so I won't go into too much detail at this very minute, but I do want to say that I would our convention center district reorganization build out, et cetera. It's a huge deal. And the city and 3CDC are spearheading that. And the reason why I put that at the top of the list is because it is changing a part of downtown that's been neglected. And Tony's work is actually a little bit farther east, near Fountain Square and then Main Street, as you'll hear him discuss. So he's taken on a different part of the city, kind of the core, if you will. So over here where our offices are on Plum Street next to Paycor Stadium, that's where a lot of the new development you're going to see come to fruition over the next few years. But also like his Terrace Plaza Hotel conversion to the terraces is probably going to be one of the coolest things we're going to see happen over the next half decade.
I was just driving by it this morning. I'm very excited to see what this is going to look like. There's a lot of work. It's all like kind of like remediation, making it safe and everything right now, because for just the neglect is just horrifying. And you know what? You know where else we saw some neglect of like nothing happening is the Hoffman School, which we wrote about. You know, we have these buildings and they just – somebody wants to take them on and do something different with them. I think we're at that kind of pivot moment.
We are. And there's a reason why the city trusts organizations like 3CDC or Tony Berkla's Berkla Investment Group to take on these projects because of their track record. And sometimes this is just real estate. It happens. People come in to buy buildings and maybe they have good intentions, but they don't follow through and they don't take care of their tenants or the buildings. And it's really sad because that happens so much in Cincinnati. And I hope that changes.
All right. Well, I think we should just get into it.
Okay, great. I'm excited.
Special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. I'm very excited to welcome Tony Berkla to the podcast. Sometimes one of, you know, last week we talked to Mayor Aftab Puraval. I talked to him a lot, but today this is really my first conversation with Tony. And of course, Sydney's here with me. And so that's also very fun to kind of get to know somebody. And that's the beauty of podcasts. Welcome, Tony.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I feel like you're very busy, so thank you for coming down south a little bit today to see us. We talked a little bit at the beginning about your projects and everything, and we're going to get to those in a minute. But I was hoping you would tell us a little bit about yourself, because you're not a native Cincinnatian.
I'm not, although my history here, we'll talk a little bit about that. But I am from Indianapolis. I was born and raised in California, actually, and moved to Indianapolis before high school. But I've been a real estate guy from day one. Went to college for real estate finance, economics. I love real estate. I'll just tell you that. And I built a company around my love, and that's really.
Where did you go to college?
So I went to, I'll be proud of, Kelley School of Business, Indiana University, the one of the top big. Top ranked business schools in the country. So, and very much specializing in real estate. So I went there, I was in there in the mid 90s.
All right. So you knew what you wanted to do. I wanted to be a journalist. I don't really remember like when it became a thing, but like even from when I was little, my mom was like, you said you wanted to be a reporter. So I get that. But you know, I could write like for my middle school newspaper. What was your first foray into real estate?
Architecture. I loved architecture. My problem was I couldn't draw a straight line. And so the only other ways to get into real estate was to do a real estate development, so I could be with architects, I could be with attorneys, I could be with designers and planners. And so that was my transition, not being a very good drawer, if you will, on the architectural side.
Tony, I resonate with that because I can't draw at all, but I love architecture and design. So I went to school for architectural journalism.
Okay.
And wanted to be around people like you who are doing the work. So very happy to be here.
All right. Well, then you both have the perfect job. We all do.
We all do.
Did you say, okay, I want to do residential real estate or commercial? Like, was there like, do you like pick a path?
Not really. you know, the path picks you sometimes. Becoming a real estate developer is not an easy transition from college. Usually you have to spend a lot of time, whether you go on to get your law degree or go back and get your MBA or something along those lines. I actually got chosen coming out of IU to work for a developer. So I was a developer day one, very green, and learned the business through the eyes of a construction team. So I really learned development from internal construction, and which was a very unique path. And that's what got me started. And then just gravitated towards multifamily, mixed use. Always wanted to do high rises and really cool things like that. But that's what kind of moved me that direction.
Okay. And so you're doing this in Indianapolis. What year are we talking about?
Yeah. So mid-90s, graduated from school, and then went to work for one of the best companies in Indianapolis, very well-respected group. And so I actually started doing things here in the suburbs of Southwest Ohio. Was some of my first developments I did. So that's one of the
first. Tell us the name of the development company, because we're going to have, we'll have listeners like, I love you guys about all the politics that you follow along in City Hall, but I feel like the guests do draw in our different audiences. So they, these are things they're going to want to know.
It was a group called Petcourt Investments, really, really well-established, well-respected group in Indianapolis, maybe one of the most well-respected groups in Indianapolis. So,
what drew you to Cincinnati first? Like the, when you say the suburbs, that could be anything here.
So
we didn't have to ask you where you went to high school, but now we have to be like, what east side, west side.
Honestly, what drew me was my career path. You know, I was at the point of going back, get my MBA or my law degree. And what I learned early on in my development career is you just got to go develop. You got to learn. You got to make mistakes. You got to figure it out. So that's what drew me to Cincinnati. I ended up coming here in early 2000, working for a gentleman by the name of Bill Brisbane, the Brisbane Companies. And, you know, Bill Brisbane created one of the largest affordable housing developers in the country. And so I came and as a kind of career path, ran the Midwest group. And so anything that was in the Midwest, you know, Ohio, Illinois, Michigan, Pennsylvania, that was my territory. So I worked for him for a few years to really create and drive the Midwest group.
All right. So when you visit here, do you like drive by and like these are in show your family? Like these are my first developments. How does that go?
So it's actually a little further on. My wife and I, before we were married, we moved here. She was a vice president of operations at Fifth Third Bank in Indianapolis. I said, hey, I'm taking this job in Cincinnati. I heard that Fifth Third has a presence. So she transferred here. We moved here. We got married when we were in Cincinnati. My son was born at Bethesda North. And so we just created a life. And I always joke that a few years back, if I would have said, hey, miss, let's go move back to Cincinnati, she would have picked up and moved. So really, that was the foundation of our love for Cincinnati. And then just all the development that we were doing while we were here during those few years is what created, I think, my love for Cincinnati beyond many other things. So
what years did you live here? Because then this is probably seems like when you're kind of getting to know what it's really like here and everything.
Yeah, it was early 2000s.
Early 2000s.
So it was around 9/11, 2000s. That was when I was here in Cincinnati.
And where did you live?
I was up on the north side of town. Okay. It was a good time to be here.
A lot's changed since then.
I know. Why don't you tell us your impressions of Cincinnati, like downtown Cincinnati then?
So my impressions of downtown really didn't come to really the being until I started my own company. So I started in 2007, and knowing and being familiar with the market, understanding some people who I'm very familiar with, Chip Gerhardt over at Government Strategies and some other folks. When we started our company in 2007, Cincinnati was going to be a target market for us. We loved it. There wasn't as much activity downtown as that we see now. In fact, when we move into our 580 project, that was one of the first conversions of an office building in downtown at that size. I mean, there were some smaller things, but there wasn't a lot of activity. And, you know, the growth was definitely coming, but it wasn't there when we first started here in Cincinnati.
So I feel like at that point we did, you know, of course it's pre-pandemic and everything. So Over the Rhine's kind of this, you know, 3CDC's created. Now we're going to do a lot of development in Over the Rhine, but it's going to be historic development. It's kind of the path that the city is on, and we want to make every and preserve everything. Did you kind of have a vision of like it needs more people and it has to look a little different than just that?
So in 2014 is when we purchased the 580 building. And, you know, that was, we had some competition here in Cincinnati, but a lot of the local developers just weren't eager to take on that project and see that you can take a high rise glass building and convert it into some residential. And so there wasn't a lot of people downtown, as many as that we're seeing now. So it was a little nerve wracking. In fact, financing that project was difficult, because people would question, you know, what are you doing? Why are you going to the CBD? What's happening? And so we did get a lot of questions, and it created challenges, because there wasn't, you couldn't pick and choose and see your competitor, two blocks away. There wasn't a lot of competition.
Yeah, but it's a huge risk that you took. And as a real estate reporter, I talk to people all the time who look to the 580 building conversion as like one of the seminal projects that started this wave here in Cincinnati. And now we've got massive things going on, like the City Club round two happening at PNC Tower, your Terrace Plaza conversion coming up. I mean, you were kind of at the cusp of all of that starting, and now you're still going. So what has attracted you to doing conversions? Because that is not easy. And in Cincinnati, you have a lot of hoops to jump through in terms of financing and just getting through all of the powers that be and their opinions.
Believe it or not, I'm a new construction guy. I like new construction. I like the vision of trying to find something and do something unique and different on whatever property that is. The conversions came about because they just make sense. We consider Burkle Investment Group a boutique company. And what I mean by boutique is that it's not necessarily that we don't take on big projects. We take on very unique projects, ones that take a long time to do. They're not easy. They're not rubber stamps. They're not go pick a plan off of your shelf and do that development. So we also look at main locations. And if you look at the assets we own here in Cincinnati, they're all main, whether it's 830 Main or Terraces or 580, they're all on a main block. And so that's really what drove us towards that is the economics and looking at main locations and then really looking at good sound buildings. I think I've looked at maybe every building in town and I'm just pick and choosing what I think makes sense for our company that works for us and where we think we could make an impact.
All right. So you did pick a very tough project with the Terrace Plaza, that very controversial about what was going to happen to that. There's the preservationists. There's a lot of, we've written that to death. Everyone is here knows what we're talking about. Who's listening? But you didn't shy away from that.
You were very patient.
So that's a long story.
All right. Well, we don't have that much time, but like I like a good story. So
I will tell you, I turned away from it at first. And the reason I did was because we were in the middle of converting 580. And 580 was a difficult transition because we had Fifth Third Bank that occupied the tower. So we had to work around Fifth Third Bank. It just took a long time. It was a unique conversion because it's, you know, one of the first office conversions of its size in downtown. So it just took a long time. Obviously, at 580, we had to cut windows out of brick that was solid. And that's some of the brokers who were trying to sell Terraces said, hey, it's almost the same thing. I was like, no, I don't have time. You know, we don't have time. We're focusing on 580. We want to do a good job. At the same time, in 2016, we bought the 830 Main building. And so there was occupants there. So I just didn't have time to do it. But it took a long time. You know, as you know, the ownership has transitioned many, many times. So by time
there's selling, there's bankruptcy, there's planning commission, there's a lawsuit. None of it really, other than you buying it out of bankruptcy, none of this really involves you, but it was complicated.
There was a lot going on. Plus, you know, it's... you know, it was a train wreck of a building. It just from just the what happened to it. Nobody paid attention to it, and it just was falling apart. And so about the time we were finishing up our conversion, it was still available. And so we put an offer in and got our offer accepted, and we went to bat and started what we tried to do, you know, 4 years ago. And then we got caught up in a federal lawsuit for a lot of things that happened out there, ultimately won. But it's just been a long process. But love the location, love the history of the building. When we walk in that building, we call it Play-Doh. There's a lot you could do. A lot of transition you can make, and it makes you excited on one hand. And then on the other hand, some days I walk through and I'm like, oh my gosh, there's a lot here. So
can you describe it for us? Like, what does it look like inside right now?
It's pretty bad. In fact, it's, so we bought it in September. We worked with the city, and we're just coming through what we call the Make Safe Plan. The building was falling apart, and I think it was a real hazard to the overall community. We were nervous taking it on because we knew things were falling off of it. So the first thing we did was we worked with the city to really make it safe. And the city's been great to work with to get that plan completed. And we're just about completed now. So before we bought it, elevators didn't work. You know, plaster's falling down. The roof was leaking. You've got every probably environmental issue. All of the guts have been stripped out of it from previous owners. So there's no copper. There's nothing of value in there. The bad thing, I think, is for the few tenants that were down on the ground floor, because they had to deal with it all. And that's been one of our struggles, is we're not an absentee landlord, but there wasn't much we could do for them. You can't fix what's not fixable. So really, it was in really bad shape. If you go in there now, we've worked with Turner Construction to really clean up everything, make it as safe as possible. We pulled out windows. We pulled down awnings. We took off the steel structure off the top that was going to fall.
Just taking down the awning made such a difference. Mm-hmm. Like, I walked by like one day there, and it's there, and it's just that block is so dark from the way it was constructed. It was historic, and I understand all of that. But if you would walk by it, it was very dark, and you were like, weren't in the same part, like a different part of downtown with it. Just taking off the awnings, it was like so different.
The awning had to come down because plaster was falling off, and as was reported probably a couple years ago, a piece of plaster fell through a woman's roof or a windshield. And so we spent $3-4 million already just making it safe, even before we take the next step. And we really thought we had to prove ourselves to the city and to the community that we're going to be a good steward of this building. For last 15 years, nobody's really been a good steward of that building. And it's a great location. It's got huge historic significance. Whether it's a historic building or not, it has huge historic significance that we are really paying attention to with our new plans. We're excited about kind of our next step.
Can we talk a little bit about the plan design? We have published some of your initial concept renderings. I'm sure you'll have more come out soonish, which we'd love to use. But for our listeners, since they probably aren't looking at those right now, can you describe kind of the visual changes that you're making to the exterior?
Yeah. So, you know, number one, we started with the history of the building. And we really wanted to be respectful of the history, even though we wanted to make some changes that would not have been able to be completed if it was a historic building. So that's why we sort of pushed back on the historics of it. But we're still paying attention to the historics of the building, the block portion, the modernism style of its construction back in the 70s. Or earlier, I guess. And so what we've done is we've really paid attention to the ground floor because the building has no life on the ground level. Mm-hmm. And so what we've done is we've come back in and we've actually taken the ground level to a two-story, which is very much more in line with where it was when it was first constructed. So we brought some of that back. We've also pulled back the building a little bit to open up the sidewalks and make it a little bit more friendly for pedestrians and really give the building a base where people can pay attention to it. And then as we work our way up through what people call the big block of the building, we're coming in with a new facade that is still a modernist facade, but it has a new spin on it. So it has a good feel and look. There is some issues going on with the brick that we have to deal with, and are dealing with that. We've come up with a new facade. And then really paying attention to the eighth floor, which is the transition. That's where the hotel lobby was. And that's really the heartbeat of the building that we're paying attention to and before you work your way up into the residential piece.
So will it stay that way, like the eighth floor for the residents who live there? That'll kind of be their base?
It's their base, but we're also trying to open it up to the public as well, looking at different opportunities, whether it's restaurant or other venues, so that the public can appreciate what the Terrace Plaza is. And then we will work up into the hotel suites, and which will be residential, and then ultimately bringing back the gourmet room. And as we look, we're looking to do an overbuild on whether it's a outdoor venue or some sort of conference center or wedding venue to help really re-energize the gourmet room.
I think that's important. As I've interviewed so many downtown residents for the downtown project here at the Inquirer, people want more public spaces in our incredible buildings to access. Like, not every building should just be for residents. So I think some of the more successful buildings, the residential conversions, if you will, that are coming online, those will be the ones with more public amenities.
I'm going to take everyone back in time real quick. And a project that I was very much on board with before I even covered City Hall, Mayor Mallory wanted to turn the beautiful City Hall courtyard into a wedding venue. And there was so much pushback. It was going to cost like $4 million. But if there was a plan to like make money off of it and everything, and if you go inside City Hall, I mean, it's so beautiful in the courtyard. It could be amazing. And so I get that. And I've always thought that is such a missed opportunity for City Hall to bring more people in, and not, it's a public building that we have so much history in these buildings.
Mm-hmm. People love our buildings here in Cincinnati. That's probably one of the things that you appreciate about Cincinnatians and the architecture here.
We're using the word appreciate, right?
Absolutely. Good one. So. Just to pull it back to the architecture a little bit, are you still planning to kind of cover that brick box with, again, some sort of unique like architectural overlay, and the parking will be behind that? Is that still the idea?
That is the idea. And we've been working with Restark here in downtown Cincinnati as our design architecture firm. And we have been exploring what those designs look like and what they – and really to bring that life back, both during the day and during the night. So lighting this building is going to be significant from that architectural perspective. I mean, it stretches a city block. It sits on a very prominent corner. There's so many good things happening at Fountain Square and up and down both Race and Vine that, trying to make sure that we do it in a very thoughtful way. But the brick facade has some issues that we're having to deal with, and trying to fix those things as we reimagine it is what we've been working on.
I do think something that was very telling this week, Sydney wrote about it earlier this week, is Bad Sax and how you moved it. I mean, there are many, many instances in the city of displacement. And that is all that's been, time after time we've heard about that, but to make way for new, and like there, and it's just this constant tension, but you took that, and it's a happy solution where he moved and a nice new space and giving him a new life.
So Sydney, if you've interviewed Gus Miller, the owner of Bat Sacks, you'll get a warm spot in your heart just talking to the man. He's got great stories. His longevity in downtown is over 100 years with his family. He's an institution. But there were other tenants there as well that were all being treated very poorly, I think, because of the nature of the building. So we didn't charge anybody rent since we bought it. And we worked with them on their schedules to try to help move their businesses where we can. Gus really worked well for us at the 580 building. It filled a space where we really didn't see another use for a restaurant. We really wanted to see a retail use. And then being on that end of the block, being across from Richter and Phillips, being adjacent to, you know, nice restaurants and you know, just growth. And then the hotel that's going in across the street, all were really positive. And we walked Gus down through the space, he and his wife, and they loved it. And it's a total upgrade going from a space that has no plumbing, no air conditioning, no anything to we built that space out for him that has plumbing and air conditioning, all the modern.
All the modern things. Office didn't have air conditioning one day last week. And I was like, no, we can't go in.
I was not here. Yeah, it does seem like it's a higher end, if you will, part of downtown, given the retail tenants surrounding that block and then the restaurants, some of which you own. Right. So let's talk a little bit about that. You're bringing in a bourbon bar and kitchen next to Bot Sacks as well.
Yeah. And you own Prime.
Yep.
So this was a new fact to me this morning. Yeah.
So we own Prime. We own Street City Pub. And we actually own the cafe up on the second floor. And we're getting ready to announce our fourth restaurant downtown, which is going to be at the base of the 830 Main building, which is going to be called Primo. It's an Italian steak concept. My partner is Nelson Castile, has really worked on. We've opened up the first one in
Milltown. Are you breaking news right now?
I don't think we're breaking news. I think you know, Nelson's indicated that we're doing this.
I have heard of the restaurant, but I didn't know what type of restaurants. And obviously, it's at this like historic building that you're redoing, and not a lot of people have written about the 830 Main project, so we definitely want to talk about that.
Yeah, so no, it's an exciting part of town. I think terraces at its end of conversion will be just as exciting. I think Sixth Street is wonderful. We love it. We think it's a major thoroughfare between, you know, 71 and 75. I think it's a great transition point, and you could see all the great things are happening. So, you know, that side of Sixth Street will be great, especially as we look at the convention center and all the things that are happening. But, you know, Gus and the other tenants just couldn't survive there while we were going through the renovation. So moving them down to you know, a couple blocks, you know, to the east, you know, I think it was a win-win. And we were able to maintain a historic establishment here in Cincinnati. So we're excited about that. So
can smaller retail like that thrive in our downtown area? Because, you know, we've gone from like the big retailers that they said that's not working. I mean, bring back a TJ Maxx. Let's go.
Urban Target.
Everyone wants a Target. Closed actually for my lunchtime shopping habits. But so that wasn't really working. And we've seen that. But do you think that smaller retail with all of the residents that will be coming?
So, you know, that's a important, strong question. When we bought the 580 building, it was 75% vacant. All the retail along restaurants, we probably had Silver Ladle, which is an institution here as well, by the way. And we had Mr. Sushi. And that was it. We had nothing else. And so I think with the growth of the downtown residents, you know, smaller retail can work. And it, you know, everybody always asks me about the competition in Cincinnati. I go, I don't see competition. I just see growth. Growth is good. Having bodies, having lots of bodies here after hours. My wife and I always joke when we were here in early 2000, she worked in the Fifth Third Tower. And her walk to her car was two or three blocks away. And that was a tough walk sometimes when there's nobody out. Mm-hmm. And it's nerve-wracking sometimes when there's just nobody on the streets. And so the more bodies downtown, I think, just helps thrive. You know, it's chicken or egg, right? Which, you know, you need the bodies to be able to be patrons at restaurants and things.
So there is so much residential coming online. Where is everyone coming from?
Good question. And are they willing to pay a premium? Because downtown is one of the more expensive neighborhoods. I mean, we're seeing like upwards of like, I don't know, $5,000 for certain units in some of these buildings. I mean, it's like amazing architecture. But what do you think the attraction is?
I think it's the corporate. You know, you got lots of Fortune 5 companies here. And I think it's that transition where people want a lifestyle. And instead of you know, commuting back downtown, now that there's these opportunities, you know, I think people want to live down here. There just wasn't the opportunities to do so. And you got a lot of corporate, you know, Fortune 5 companies here. I think that's really where it's coming from. And it's just having those opportunities where they weren't here before. You know, 580, we've been almost 100% occupied from day one, with the exception of during the pandemic. We took a little dip, as most people did. Because there wasn't the things to do. Restaurants were closed, you know, your entertainment was closed. So people weren't willing to pay that premium to be downtown. But now that we've kind of bounced back from that, we're seeing the same thing. We have rents similar to what you just said at 580. You know, I think as people develop their projects, the more unique they are with the mix of use, as you said earlier, that's probably been our biggest success at 580. You know, you could park your car in the garage, you can have you can have dinner, you can have breakfast, you can have lunch without leaving that building. You can go to speakeasy. You can do a lot within the building. And I think those are the things that people are interested in, and they're willing to pay a little bit more than being out in maybe a suburban property.
Can you live downtown with the family right now? Is it family friendly, or are we only talking about like the younger employees who aren't married, or like newly married couples? Are we going to be bringing families down here?
I think you can. Now, we haven't seen a lot of that. I mean, obviously, your early adopter is the younger person willing to take that risk. We have a lot of people at the 580 building who actually have two homes, whether it's here in the city, maybe in the suburb, or in a kind of a fun place downtown, or they have another city that they live in. So we see a lot of that with our current residents. But I definitely think there's an opportunity for families. And I think the product has to be built towards them and for them. A lot of the product's been built on a smaller scale, more micro or smaller units, which makes it a little tougher to raise a family.
Yeah, it seems like some of these conversions, even the ones that I've opened in the last 5 years, have smaller units. I've talked to the residents who live in there. They're like, yeah, I live on the penthouse level, but my unit is pretty small, even though it's two bedrooms. Now, it's subjective, like what you think
it's
is small.
It's less to
yeah,
clean.
Trust me, I moved here from New York. Like, small is way smaller than some of these Cincinnati units. But I'm curious if there's like a worry in your mind as a building owner and manager about the transient population here, like at 580, do you have a lot of people moving in at 23 and leaving at 28 because they're getting married and having kids?
It's a good question. I wouldn't call it transient. Transient is more year to year. We have longer term residents at 580. But, you know, I think our business is transient in nature. Mm. And so, you know, we do everything we can to keep the high quality, and so nobody wants to leave. But we do see couples blending and taking a larger unit, two smaller units become one larger unit. We see marriages, we see those sorts of things, and we see people moving out for time to time for transfers and things like that. We see we have a huge doctor population at 580.
Doctor?
Yeah, we have a huge doctor population because it's close enough, and so we see that transition as well as they take different jobs and move on. So,
how many units are you going to offer at 830 Main and the terraces?
So we've got 60 units, and we're just about complete at 830 Main. We're finishing up. They're effectively done. They're a little smaller, but they're pretty unique because there's only 5 units per floor, a little smaller. Our big amenity will be the restaurant and its location. We love our location. I think that part of the city along Main Street is doing wonderful. And then at Terraces, we're in the 200-ish range at Terraces, so.
All right, so I have a question, something that we've been mulling over at the Inquirer as we write about downtown. When you're doing all of this, do you think about downtown crime? Is that something that plays into like what you think about when you're making decisions, or that it ebbs and flows, of course, and that's not part of your calculations ever?
Well, 100%. When we bought 580 and 2014, the last step I took was I put my tennis shoes on. I was staying at 21C, and I just walked. I wanted to feel comfortable. Back in 2014, there were a lot fewer people on the street. But yeah, I mean, absolutely, crime takes consideration in any development, any location, whether it's suburban or urban. But I would tell you, the more people that are on the street, I appreciate, you know, the efforts that are being made. And, you know, we feel comfortable enough to continue to make investments and develop properties here in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I've been writing a lot about this question because our readers and clearly our listeners have all sorts of opinions about crime in downtown. And I think they also lump in what's happening in Over the Rhine in the West End with downtown crime and safety. Very separate issues, in my opinion, and the stats show that. In downtown, you really are pretty safe across the board. What's relatively high are like auto thefts and property crime, but property crime and auto thefts are up across the country. And I think that's something that we're just seeing because of the pandemic and different issues. It's more of a national problem than a Cincinnati-specific issue.
Well, we engage our property. So we own construction, development, and property management. Our property management engages with the city, 3CDC, all the ambassador programs. We engage with the City of Cincinnati Police Department. We try to understand the best we can do to help protect our property, our location. Obviously, we have restaurants on the ground floor where people are eating outside. So, you know, crime is a concern, and we try to pay attention to that and be proactive. And, you know, we're pretty pleased. Comparable to other cities, I think Cincinnati is doing relatively well.
Do you anticipate staying here long term and doing more and more projects here? Or do you take that in like smaller chunks making your decision?
So, yeah, I mean, obviously we've owned the 580 building for a long time. I think it was published that we were trying to sell it. That wasn't really the case. So we plan to continue to redevelop 580. We've owned it for 10 years, so we're coming in to do a fresh. We actually, I'm not going to make news today, but we have a big plan to do something really cool in some of the vacant space that will be newsworthy.
Vacant space in the 580 building?
In the 580
office
building.
Office space?
Office space.
Intriguing. And, yeah, I feel like you could break news, though. I mean,
is it going back to residential or coming
no,
to residential?
I'm not quite ready to go there yet.
And then, all right, guys, this is what our life looks like. Sydney and I do this all
we
day,
try
every day.
For you. For you.
And then bring it on. So with the 60 units at we call it the Vibe at 830. And then we own the parking lot next door. So we have an ability to do a new building. And then terraces is a beast. So we've
got do a new building on the parking lot.
That's our intention, is to create something new. It was always our intention, to do something there, you know, with interest rates going up and construction costs, we've sort of held back. You know, we operate it as a parking lot, but it's an opportunity for us. We love the location. So we don't have any plans to go anywhere. We like the city. We like the growth. You got two major sports teams. You've got great Fortune 5 companies.
We have to say three major sports teams. Well, I heard you played soccer.
I did, and so I should have said FC's in my heart. So, so you've got great entertainment. All the things happen along the river, and you know we're getting good rents. Just the growth of downtown, I hope, continues.
What's the rent threshold that the city can sustain? Are we there right now, or can it go higher?
It's a good question. Cindy indicated some high-end rents here in Cincinnati, and those are high. We call that the ouch factor, and we've got some of those at 580, and we only have 13 of them.
But they're two floors, right? They're penthouses. They're two floors, and where did we see a peak at these? In the Puget Sound trial, because the FBI took up residence in the 580 building. It was kind of ground zero for some of their corruption
by
work.
By the way, I didn't know that. So,
small world, guys.
No one knew that. Yeah. but we did get a look at it. They were, I mean, other than, you know, the FBI just kind of furnished it like their two developer guys were living there. It was, you could see like that they were very big light air units and there was a lot to them.
Absolutely.
I wanted to ask you if you think downtown needs more new construction. Obviously you're eyeing that parking lot, but that's something that downtown's really not taking on at the minute. We're talking ground up new builds. I think there's room for it. There's a debate going on about whether surface lots should be turned into developable spaces downtown. Where could you see that happening?
Surface lots.
Okay.
It's, you know, downtown is difficult. And you know, I love new construction, but there's not a lot of opportunities because you have historic buildings and you have, so, and then just the nature of trying to buy a building, you know, expensive and you to tear them down and things. 100% new construction. I think there's a real spot for that. I think construction costs are high right now. You know, buying a building that wasn't working and converting it works, like an old office building. And you know, obviously our office vacancy has gone up a little bit, but, you know, having a surface lot doesn't do a lot, for the fabric of the community. So, you know, that's one of the reasons we bought, the lot we bought. They're just hard to find and hard to buy.
Mm-hmm. That could change here soon. I think there's like upwards of 150 surface lots in the downtown development zoning district, if I have that correctly, which is probably too many. But I'm sure our listeners would say that there's maybe not enough parking downtown in some cases, or maybe at the banks. Most people here are driving downtown from the suburbs to attend major events, and that's when the crowds come and the parking gets tough. So everyone has their opinions on that one.
So we do have to wrap up, but Sydney and I can ask you a million questions. But I do. We like to end on a fun note. It seems like you've been coming here a lot to visit since you have a lot of projects going. What are your favorite things to do here?
So I have an apartment here. And as
is it in the 580
it's
building?
It's in the 580 building. I have literally one of the coolest apartments in the city. It's the most urban unit. It sits right above the new restaurant that's going in the Bourbon. And it's I think, the coolest.
Wait, are you a bourbon drinker?
I'm not a bourbon drinker, but it's
that
just
seems like
the
a
cool
good fit
thing.
Then, because you don't want to be a bourbon drinker. I'll
be there.
My favorite thing to do is to get up in on whatever morning I'm here and go down to the river and take a run or walk. That's my absolute favorite thing to
Me
do.
Too.
It's something that doesn't get talked enough about. I think it's such a jewel to be able to go down and run along the river. As far as
like everywhere I go, people are like, you have to start running. There's had a big conversation about
you
it.
You could walk along the river too.
I do walk awesome, along the river, but it's time to start running because the Thanksgiving Day race
there you go.
Is coming. And so I guess I'm doing that. And
it's
so,
early August.
I know. But it is. It's so lovely down there in the morning on the river with the sun coming up. It is. It's you can walk it or running. Yes.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you so much for visiting us
Absolutely.
Today. We appreciate it. And we look forward to seeing everything.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
All right. So that was such a good conversation. And then it was such a natural segue because both Sydney and I like to do the same thing he does in the
Absolutely.
Morning, even though I've been walking it because we have a beautiful riverfront. So Sydney does live around downtown, we'll just say. We'll be safe.
Pendleton.
And so I did want to ask you, all right, so we know you like to go down to the riverfront, but, you know, what kind of things do you like to do downtown?
Well, first of all, I just love walking. Like, it takes me 30 minutes to get to this office. So I see a lot of stuff. I see a lot of people. I spend most of my time down here, frankly. But on the weekends, I really enjoy hanging out around my building, which is on the border of Pendleton and over the Rhine. So you'll find me at Ziegler Park and Pool, which is kind of a hot place to be. And there's so many people there. But also, it's very calming. You wouldn't think that. It's a public pool, but
I have been to the Ziegler
have
pool.
You?
It's very fun. It's like CMB scene, kind of. I mean, if you go there,
oh yeah,
you know, you're in a bathing suit and you're like, "Hey, work people."
I haven't seen anybody from work, thank God. But I try to go once a weekend. It's summer.
No, it is. You know, we're very lucky to have it downtown, and it's grown, and the things around it are really, you know. It makes it an attractive place to go and cool off in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, I look out my window from my building and there's so much beauty around, from like the old buildings to the incredible work done at you know, Ziegler Park. And then when I'm in the pool, yeah, it's gated, but I can see people walking by. And 3CDC just finished a little expansion project and brought in a taco bar next door that I guess swimmers and random people can go to. There's been a lot of changes. And I do reap the benefits, but I also am on top of it and watching what they're doing and reporting on it, I promise.
All right, I wouldn't have it any other way. You guys, thanks for listening. And Burl will be back next week. We missed him, but we loved having Sydney, right, Phil?
Thank you.